where she is. That's Shirley Bassey with, I can't tell you because I've got a special guest here. You're with Margaret O'Connor on Community Matters, but we're going to talk gardening for the next, at least 20 minutes. Good morning, Ned.
Good morning, Margaret. Great to be here as usual.
Now, Ned, I normally do a little weather announcement just for all the people who are still in bed and don't want to open the curtains. It's dull, but the sun's kind of creeping around, so I think it's going to be a beautiful day. And I have to cheat. I heard the Armidale temperature was going to be a beautiful 18 degrees. Welcome to Community Matters, Ned.
Thank you. You've got
something very exciting to talk about today.
Well, yeah, today is obsessions.
Obsessions. and why are we playing Shirley Bassey, Ned?
Well, it's, number one, it's a great get-up-and-go song. You know, it can sort of give you the energy to get going.
Ned's also been booging around.
The name of the song was History Repeats Itself. And that is quite an important when we're talking about obsessions.
Oh, is that right?
Hmm. Well, you repeat yourself, history, over and over and over and over with an obsession.
It's a sort of Groundhog Day thing.
No? Yeah, it can be.
Yes. Right.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's perfectly correct.
Well, my obsession is buying roses, and then I've given that up, though, and then they don't really survive because, you know, the climate's not quite right, or I forget about them for a little bit.
Well, the thing about obsessions, they stay with you. They can sort of hibernate or incubate for, you know, a couple of years, even 10 years, but they come back. It's somewhere lodged in the back of your brain, this idea that you've got to realise.
So you think you're born with a life purpose to obsess about something?
Well, I think I have obsessions leading back to when I was 12 or 13.
Okay.
I think the things that get implanted in your brain.
And this sort of plays out in the garden?
It does, yeah. Also, it's like having a bucket list. At the moment, I'm not getting any younger, so I have this great long bucket list of things I have to accomplish before I pass.
Yeah.
So that's always exciting. But, This chat's going to be about obsessions in gardening.
Right. I had to get the rose word in because originally we were going to talk about roses, but we will do that. But we've decided to deal with obsessions first as a kind of lead in to more seasonal topics.
Yep. So anyway, I tend to share my life, my general life and my gardening with a few obsessions. In fact, there's a whole lot of them.
So some you are think more acute, obsessions are sort of personalities that share your life?
Yes. Or ideas.
Okay.
Yes, ideas that you wish to fulfil at some stage.
Right, okay.
And I had three great examples in relation to gardening.
Yeah?
The first one is to create and grow an expansive ground cover thyme lawn.
Oh, okay. Righto.
The second, which is a relatively new one, is this crazy obsession of collecting new daily varieties.
Uh-huh.
Even though I do not have a vacant space left in my garden. And the third is just to create the best soil possible in my garden, continually and repetitive applications of products.
Right.
Hmm.
Oh. So are we going to talk about those obsessions or are we going to talk about the process of developing and expressing an obsession?
Both. At the end, we'll be talking about those three obsessions in the gardening.
Uh-huh.
But first, talk a bit about obsessions generally and why. Why am I talking about this?
Hmm.
So I write hundreds of garden blogs, and then when I have to re-edit them and rewrite them, I came to realise there was this commonality, a continuous thread of how gardening mirrors my life.
Right.
A bit like a personal diary. Essentially, my life is like a parable of general life.
Right.
Yeah. Like, for example, you have life's ups and downs or garden's ups and downs, good moments, bad moments, pleasures, frustrations, enjoyments, disappointments. I mean, the list can go on, the successes and failures.
Do you ever get long stretches of being becalmed? No, I don't think you do.
I'm not sure about becalmed. It's not a frenzy.
Hmm.
The obsessions I'm going to talk about are sane and they're not destructive.
Mm-hmm.
Those sort of emotions relate to mental health issues of obsessions, and that's where it's far more acute.
right,
and troublesome.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I have a bit of experience with this. About 15, 20 years ago, I was diagnosed with bipolar 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this long stretch, well, for me personally, long stretches of great creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And you accomplish lots of important things.
Yep.
But then it's counterbalanced by, for me, short periods of massive manic depression.
Right.
Luckily, those episodes are very few. So I've realised I've probably had bipolar nearly my whole life and just wasn't diagnosed.
Right, right.
So, you know, obsessions in that respect are horrendous. But I'm on some lovely drugs, which I always enjoy popping every morning.
I think we'll call them medication.
Oh, thank you.
But it is interesting, and I'm pleased that you've shared that. Because I think the more we mainstream getting on top of mental health issues, the more it's going to be a normal thing for people to normalise people getting help when they need it.
Yeah, people don't talk about the mental health experiences often enough. It's sort of that word, that behaviour which people don't like to talk about. Yeah,
that's right.
Which,
that's
and
right.
people should, because it's a the great educator conversation. Educator.
And I think I've just had a weekend away from this district. I went to the Big Smoke and it was lovely. It's just lovely to be with different people for a little bit.
So back to obsessions in general, I believe that most people who accomplish and succeed a lot in life have to some degree the traits of obsessive behaviour.
Okay.
For example, an artist, a writer, a sportsman, a businessman, a politician like you, Margaret.
Oh.
They've got to have this determination, this inner self-belief and confidence that they can concentrate, focus, harness and direct their energies in order to realise their visions and dreams. So, and I've seen many examples of this through my life, you know, tunnel vision. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be the best at it, no matter what.
That's and I look. I have seen it in gardening, in the world of gardening as well. People that there's an open garden. I won't say too much to identify it, but a young couple who basically colonised an entire hillside, like a huge hill, just building the most amazing garden that was designed by somebody very expensive. And I thought, oh, wow,
When did you see that garden, Mark?
About 2 years ago.
Was it part of the New England Garden Festival or the St. Peter's?
Might have been St. Peter's, I think.
Yeah. It's not the one with the amazing architectural buildings.
Didn't want to identify it too much, but I'm just to the point was that it was clear that a garden of that size and gradient and aspect and expense would have had to have been a joint obsession. You know, it couldn't be less.
No.
It was magnificent.
That's
but
correct.
It couldn't be less than an obsession.
Well, that was the one which had the guest house next to the main house.
I think so.
And
that
guest house was bigger than a normal person's house.
Yeah, not sure.
I've only seen it once and it stays with me, and I think about it every second day. And actually, it's opening again. This year it's a part of the New England Garden Festival.
Uh-huh. Mm. Well, it's good actually. I'm just going to digress for a moment here. We've got to alert people to the upcoming iteration number 2 of the New England Garden Festival. I had the most beautiful experience at the New England Garden Festival iteration 1 last year. I met somebody who just took me on a journey through a health issue, and it was just something that we had in common. It was fantastic. Yeah, it was about gardening, but about gardening for your health.
So the gardening mirrors life, yet another example. While we're on that topic, New England Garden Festival.
I just thought we could digress a bit because we need to get people to get their diaries and their pens out.
Yep.
And make a big X around about November this year.
Yep, I think it's the first weekend in November. This year it's bigger and better, being number 2.
Yep.
If I get this correct, it actually goes over 6 days.
Ooh.
So you have 2 days of open gardens leading up to the festival, which was 2 days at the race course,
yeah,
and then another 2 days afterwards. And the reason is this, we have gardens opening in Tenerfield.
Wow.
And then they progress down to Gyra.
Oh.
Then to Armidale,
mm,
then to Urella and Walker.
Oh, how spectacular.
Mm.
I've got to say, I had no idea about gardening in scale or at scale until I moved up here. I mean, in Sydney, it's pocket handkerchief stuff. Up here, it's acres.
Yep.
And it is just fabulous. Mm. It's kind of like an Australian, it can be like an Australian version of Versailles.
Mm-hmm. Could, yeah, well be, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, very exciting. But back to obsessions.
Obsessions. Well, my first obsession, which has basically lasted nearly my whole entire adult life,
uh-huh,
is the creation of a thyme lawn. Now, we're talking not the bush thyme, but a ground cover thyme, Cerophyllum. Right.
Cerophyllum. Mm.
Yep. And this one has a very glossy green leaf with white flowers.
Okay. And is that's the right one to do a thyme lawn?
That is one of the candidates for a thyme lawn.
Right. Yep. Okay.
Yep. So I first read, would have been my 17 or 18, I first read an article by Vitasec Phil West on the creation a thyme lawn. She was a famous novelist, garden writer, but most famous for her white garden at Sissinghurst.
That's right.
In England.
Yeah.
Which today is one of the most visited gardens in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. Haven't been there though, Ned.
So she used to write garden articles for The Observer and in newspaper in England.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had an analogy of her articles. And it's still with me now. It's battered. It's stained with life's things, I'm sure, but it's still with me.
Life's traumas. and no doubt pleasures. Slops from your glasses of wine and other beverages.
So this thyme lawn is supposed to border my front driveway up to the garage and in between the cement traffic, wheel traffic.
Mm.
And at the beginning I was really, really obsessed.
Yeah.
I should jump back because I've actually attempted this thyme lawn in four of the houses which I've owned and lived in.
Mm-hmm.
One was in the inner city west.
Mm-hmm.
The second one was my apartment in Thailand, Bangkok, right. Thailand.
Right.
My third one was in Moree, and the fourth, the last one, has been here in Armidale. So four very, very different conditions and climate.
Amazing. Yeah.
But anyway, I got really eager when I arrived back in Armidale thinking this is the place to do it because it's a cooler climate.
That's right.
Because I'd failed in all of the four locations.
So obsessions basically gobble up deterrents.
That's right. Well, it's a thing like you'll never give up.
Yeah.
I'm gonna finally get this thing together.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's all about Shirley again, history repeats itself.
Mm.
And I was having problems with repeating failures on and on and on.
Yeah.
I mean, at the beginning I was so crazy about it that creating this lawn that no one was allowed to drive up the driveway
right.
in case they edged off and killed the tyre. Sadly, the position of my garbage bins was near the garage.
Yes.
So I used to have to carry on my back the garbage bins down past the thyme lawns onto the highway. And I at that stage I realised, Ned, you're going a bit extreme, a bit too far on this obsession. But that's what happened. No one was allowed to walk on it.
But tell me why.
Even the dog was not allowed to walk on it.
But tell me why. What is it? Is it? What lodged it in your 19-year-old brain? What was it about what Vita Sackler-West said
about it? It was just a beautiful design proposal project.
Yeah.
And actually, I have seen it in photos of King Charles's garden.
Oh.
A big, long sweep of thyme lawn.
Right. And it is supposed to smell nice when you walk on it. But are you allowed to walk on it? Because you would be
these
compacting.
Days, I don't give a bug. You can do whatever you like.
Oh, you mean you've worked that obsession through to its sort of ordinary.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes, this is another part of the
story.
Well,
as you just said, you should be able to walk on a thyme lawn. That's the purpose of having it.
I thought the purpose, but correct me because I'm probably wrong on this one, the purpose of a thyme lawn was to sort of crunch the beautiful aromas out of the oils, out of the leaves, and sort of have this wafting scent of thyme as you walk.
That's correct, yes. But, I mean, I want a beauty first.
Okay, you want the visual excitement, not yeah, the
as you drive,
olfactory.
As you walk or
not,
drive up to the house.
Not just an olfactory one.
Yeah, not the practicality. I mean,
okay, righto.
Margaret, really. I mean, is gardening practical most of the time?
I doubt it. Well, I ate my very last little tiny red bitter tomato this morning. I said, oh, there you are.
That's great, yep.
Yep, anyway.
So why do I keep failing?
Mm.
Now, you'd think thyme lawn or a thyme plant would be drought tolerant.
You would.
But generally it is.
Because they're a Mediterranean sort of dry climate.
Mm. Yeah. But the ground cover thyme has just the smallest root structure underneath, a network.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't go deep into the soil.
Right.
So when you hit a hot period, the leaves just slowly burn up and look like they're frying.
Okay.
And they just slowly recede until they've got practically nothing.
Okay.
So I've been replanting this lawn in parts for the last 14, 15, probably 16 years.
So do you...
At the moment...
Do you reseed or do you...
No, I buy
seedlings.
New plants.
Oh, okay.
Little tube stock, you know, $3.65 fellows.
Right.
So to date, all I have left is two small patches.
Ah, okay.
That's all there is. Now, this year I'm determined. I'm absolutely determined to succeed.
So this is going to be your fifth attempt?
No.
Fourth?
15th attempt.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
16th attempt.
Okay.
I have had a couple of years of thinking, well, you know, maybe you should give up, Ned. Maybe it's just time, you know. Early autumn, I decided, no, I'm going to give it another go.
Oh, good.
Because
on
it's right dead centre of the garden.
Mm-hmm. So it really must succeed.
It must. So
right.
I've been
the pivot.
Creating layers like lasagna of products on this bare area. Sea mungus, pelletized seaweed and fish, chicken manure, mushroom compost, endless mulch, just in thin layers. And then because I couldn't get any thyme, so now I've turned it into like blocks of spinach to eat, blocks of bull beetroot to use the rich red leaves to eat, and then more blocks of petunias. And they're all going fabulous.
Well, but they are with all that food.
Mm.
But you,
and it's cool weather.
Yeah.
So I am planting the thyme lawn upstarts, they call them, little tube stock, through that.
Ah.
But the problem is I have because I'm allowed to drive over this area now and put the car in the garage. That's permissible. But I've raised the soil so high that when I reverse or I drive into the driveway, it just flies everywhere.
Okay.
Can you understand?
I think so.
The bottom of the car.
The undercarriage of the car is lower than the top of your vegetable patch.
That's correct.
Okay. And the vegetable patch is basically making way. It's really just the advancer, if you like, for what's going to become your 16th attempt at a thyme lawn.
Too right. Mm-hmm. Too right.
Coolio. Right.
So anyway, this spring
You sure you're not killing your time with kindness? Too much, Tucker?
Oh, never.
Never. No such thing.
Well, that's also one of my third obsession is just continually applying products to improve the quality of my soil.
Okay, this is going to be done in orderly fashion, though. Let's finish thyme first.
Yep. Well, you jumped in with a question.
I know.
Which I love. I've pretty well talked all about it. It's going to happen this year.
Rightio.
I've got before and after pictures. I reckon I could do it.
Is that a good idea, do you think, to take a before and after picture? Does that help the motivation?
Oh, definitely.
Right, okay.
And I say to customers who come into the nursery and they've got a problem or they want to grow something, I say, it's a joke at the end. You know, I want a before and after photo, please, in 6 months, 12 months.
Oh, what a great idea.
So failure is just not going to happen this year.
Okay.
It's a bitter pill, failure, isn't it?
It is.
There's not much fun.
Sucking on it a few of them lately.
It could, like, ruin and stain your whole life. Oh, God.
Oh, surely not. That's why God gave us a beautiful blue sky to gaze into. That's to correct. Take your mind off it.
I have added a couple of different varieties of the thyme ground covers. One's called a bergamot, which has greyer leaves and little lovely tiny fat spirals of a cerise pink, I would imagine. Another one called Dune Valley, which has yellow and green foliage.
Oh, okay, variegated.
Yeah. Anyway, I just hope I can get it through the summer this year. I mean, it only gets half day sun, even in summer, because the front of the house facing the east.
Right.
So it's not all day.
Yep.
But hopefully the soil is good enough. At the moment, it's riddled with worms, which is wonderful. The layers of the compost, et cetera, going on really is making...
Terrific.
Yeah.
All right. So that's your thyme lawn.
Yeah. My second one is dahlias. Now, this is a newly... This is probably my third year into dahlias. The first year I tried a few and I absolutely loved them. This year I probably got up to 40, 50 different dahlias.
Oh.
And I don't have the biggest garden in the world, but I found places to put them.
Mm-hmm.
This year I'm determined that I need fimbriatas, which are the fine petaled ones. Like, I'm not sure how you would describe them.
Are they spidery dahlias with the...
Yes, but to an extreme.
Oh, okay.
The spidery ones, you're probably talking about the cactus ones.
Yeah, I think
which
so.
I'm obsessed with as well.
All right, okay.
So I've cleared out a whole new garden at the front and I'm just going to put cactus varieties, which I've collected over the last year, and then over the winter try to find some more.
Terrific.
Yeah. And then at the front, I'm taking out, I think I've talked about this before, I'm taking out a row of roses, a long hedge. I'm going to plant one variety of red dahlias called Mrs. Reese at the front.
Mrs. Reese.
Reese, R-E-E-S.
Mrs. Reese. Oh, okay. Yeah. And are those the Bonica roses that are going? Bonica?
No, I've never done a Bonica.
Oh, okay.
Well, it doesn't have a scent.
No, okay.
So it's not really up there on must have.
Right. Okay.
Which is a bit strange because I've practically totally lost my sense of smell.
Right. Mm. Okay. What is it about dahlias that fascinates you to the point of obsession, do you think?
Well, collecting can be an obsession.
Mm.
Well, most grand collections are an obsession. To have one of this and one of that, or 10 of this and 5 of that. You know, you build and build and build, and you think, I need that one as well. Oh, the collection's not big enough. There is not a big enough variety.
Right.
And why do I love dahlias? They just don't shut up flowering from late spring right up to the frosts.
Right. So they take you
very little maintenance. Mm. Just a stake here or two. They need good water in the height of the summer, but there are ways around that.
Mm-hmm.
I just love them. Love them.
Good.
Love them. And they're just so big, bold, and make you happy.
They do.
Super happy.
They do, don't they? And I think, as I've said before, in Europe and particularly France and places like that, they absolutely replace the role of roses that we, in the English and sort of Australian conventional tradition, we tend to use roses for colour and mass planting, but not so in France. It's more dahlias.
Well, 20, 30 years ago, they were deemed ugly.
Oh.
They're completely out of fashion.
Hmm.
And the last 5-10 years, bang, they're back.
Yeah.
It's a worldwide phenomenon.
Right. So you can have group obsessions, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a member of nearly every Facebook dahlia page or site in the world. Every day I'm bombarded with beautiful fresh photos, and I think, I've got to have that, and I've got to have that one. In America they call it the killing game. Killing games. That's the name of that movie, isn't it? When you have to end up killing everybody else in order to survive, to win and thus survive.
The Hunger Games.
That's it, I'm sorry. The Hunger Games.
Yeah, well, I deliberately disapprove of the thematic, the themes of that. So my daughter hasn't told me really what it's about, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty brutal and a bit, dystopian. A lot dystopian, I suspect.
Very much,
Which is why we garden, not to be dystopic.
Anyway, and the third one is creating the best soil. And I have a lot of people come into the nursery saying, oh, no, I have great soil and I need to improve it. No, it's just, you know, unless it's seething or seeming with worms, you know, you can always make it better.
Yeah.
In life, everything can be improved on.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're supposed to have 10 billion microbes in the size of your thumb.
Is that right? Well, I think it is true, though, that people are now understanding how soil microbes work and how plant exchange and those things, that enormous city underground, that huge economy of fungi and mycorrhizal and unpronounceable things, actually, you know, this massive trading game that's going on down there.
Mm.
And more and more ordinary gardeners want to be part of that, don't they? They want to be part of that underground world. They don't want to just tip a lot of fertilizer on the top and walk away and forget about it.
Well, I don't feed my plants now, I feed the soil.
Yeah.
And I read an interesting blog the other day online where a gentleman said if you have 100 of for your garden, $90 should go to soil improvement and $10 should go to buying plants. Now, I thought that's pretty extreme, Margaret. Mm. But I got home and I have a little box of all my, well, it's actually a bloody big box of all my invoices from gardening. And I sort of roughly totaled them up and I realised I was spending $75 out of that 100 on soil improvement.
That's pretty good. That's
mulch,
there.
Manures, tonics.
Yep.
So I was quite chuffed.
Right.
And it's not a one-off. Every week, every fortnight, I continue and continue and continue.
Right.
Trying to improve the soil.
Yeah.
And hopefully, especially in summer or we get another drought, if the soil is beautiful and rich, then it'll be able to retain that moisture.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it, isn't it? It's actually changing the water cycle as it operates on your patch, whatever the size of your spot is. It's actually retaining that water, whether it's a broadacre farm, and this is something that's been talked about in farming for probably the last 20 years, you know, almost probably longer, but it's had a bit of a resurgence. But even on your own garden, you can make a massive difference to water retention by doing what you're saying. But if you're doing a little time check for ourselves. But if you are a complete novice at this, what's the entry? If our listeners were, say, novices and wanted to know, well, how do I start on this obsession of soil improvement? What to do? Do you want to give people a little bit of an entree into how to get into it?
Well, the number one is making your own compost, which can be another bit of obsessive behaviour, but a great one.
Yep.
You know, you're loving taking all these grass clippings or leaves from shrubs, blah, 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 and making a compost and putting layers of manure and lime and leaves of comfrey and so that it slowly build up. So I have about three of those on the go all the time. But I like just dressing the top of the soil. I'm a lazy gardener. I hardly ever dig anything in.
Right.
Just let nature take its course. So you've got pelletized seaweed and fish. You've got manures. You've got mulches, all those sort of things. And the thinner the layer, the better.
Oh, okay. And just sometimes
people put coffee grounds on. I find coffee grains straight to the garden and not don't work that well, but they work beautifully when you're creating compost.
Oh, terrific. Okay. Good.
I think we're about it. We're done.
So those are the...
Unless you have another question.
Oh, well, I've got so many questions, but I think we might have a little bit of music.
Wacko.